At least four of us need to go, so there's two in each vehicle. We're gonna drop Doc off on the way out. All right. Let's go by my place and get Mel and the girls. There's room in the trailer, and plenty left to load up there. I pulled the truck up in front of the house, and with everyone's help, we quickly filled the trailer. The mattresses and stuff the girls would need for the night took priority. Danny, Bobby, and Ted would ride out with Sarge, and one of them would ride with me on the way back. We got the girls loaded with plenty of complaining from them about being cramped from all the stuff we'd packed. And then we headed off, with Sarge in the lead and Jeff behind me on his Harley. As they pulled out onto the highway, Leanne pointed to the smoldering remains of the house where I had been just a few hours ago.
Dad, what happened to that house?
I looked at her in the mirror. That's where the sniper was. The girls all craned their necks to get a better look. We passed through Altoona quickly, garnering the attention of the people milling about in front of the store. I'm sure they'd heard the fireworks. Sarge stepped on it, and we were doing 60 as we headed to Paisley. He finally had to slow down when he turned onto the dirt road into the forest. At the cabins, everyone went to work unloading. Danny and I were carrying a mattress into our cabin when he asked about Reggie. In all the madness, I'd forgotten about his body still lying in the road. Hey, Sarge, we got to do something about his body. I called to Sarge as he headed for the cabin, with a mattress balanced on his head.
We will. He ain't going anywhere, he said casually, as he went through the door.
I looked at Mike as he grabbed a couple of boxes and rolled my eyes.
Is he always like that? Doesn't he care about anyone?
Dude, he cares more than you know. But y'all are alive and Reggie isn't, and there's no time to mourn right now. He walked off toward the house with the boxes, leaving me to feel like an asshole. I jogged over to him. Hey, man, I wasn't trying to be a dick. He slapped me on the shoulder. No worries, man. He's still a grumpy old fucker, but he cares. In less than 30 minutes, the trailer and truck were unloaded, our stuff in one cabin, and Danny and Bobby's in another. Danny and I both tried to tell Sarge we could use one cabin to give them more room, but he and the other guys insisted. Sarge summed it up.
Families need space.
I gave Mel a hug and kiss, told her I'd be back soon, and headed for the truck.
Be careful, she called out.
I will. Jeff came up to the truck as Danny was getting in on the passenger side.
Don't worry, man. We'll keep an eye on him.
I know. And thanks. He slapped the door as I pulled away. We made two more trips, hauling more crap than you could imagine. Fuel drums for my house, wood stoves, generators that Ted scavenged from abandoned houses while we were gone. We were on our way out to the cabins of the fourth trip when the bill for using the exact same route again and again was delivered. Just after we made the turn onto Highway 42 at the Kangaroo store, a figure stepped out into the road and fired at Sarge's buggy. Danny and I realized something was up when Ted opened up on the saw from the passenger side. The muzzle flashes in the tunnel of trees in the dark gave a scene of surreal strobe light effect. I saw the figure in the road go down. Tracers streamed from the weapon as Ted turned his attention to the right side of the road.
On the right! Fire on the right side!
Sarge screamed into the radio. Danny stuck the muzzle of his rifle out the window and fired blindly into the night. Sarge stomped in the accelerator, and I followed suit, pushing the old Suburban hard to clear the ambush.
Is everyone okay? You guys all right back there? Sarge called.
Yeah, we're good. You guys all right? Danny replied.
I sprung a leak, but it ain't nothing.
I hope the old shit's all right, I said, watching the road ahead. It'd probably take more than that to kill the old fucker. We made it to the cabins without further incident. Sarge climbed out of the buggy, blood all over his face, though you couldn't tell from the way he acted. He immediately went to unloading the trailer. Sarge, hey, you need to clean that shit up, I said, grabbing his arm as he headed for the cabin. Jerking his arm away, he said,
I'm fine. It's only a scratch.
I ain't worried about your old ass. I don't want my wife and kids to see you like this. Clean that shit up, I said, as I threw him a bandana. He smiled, the glow from kerosene lanterns barely illuminating his face. Good point, he said, as he started to wipe at the drying blood, spitting onto the cloth. What do you mean, you ain't worried about me? He said, grinning like a mule eating unripe apples. Shit. It'd take more than that to kill your old mean ass. You ain't fooling anyone. He laughed and picked up a box, helping me and the guys carry the rest of what we needed to go inside to the cabins. Are you done for the night? Mel asked, as I dropped a box onto the ground. No. One more trip and we are. How are the girls taking to the new place? She pointed to two mattresses on the other side of the cabin. They were all out. Good. You okay? Yeah. Mike and Jeff are being a pain in the ass trying too hard to help, but I'm all right. I laughed. Take a broom to them if they get to bothering you. I will. Just hurry, okay? We will. I kissed her on my way out the door and glanced at my watch. It was 2:45 in the morning. One more trip would put us here close to daylight. Morgan! Sarge called from outside. I hopped down the stairs. Yeah? We need another route. We can't go that way again. There's another way, but we're going to have to cut through the woods. Since we aren't taking the trailer this trip, we should be able to make it. You got enough fuel in this rig? Yeah, but it will probably be close to empty by the time we get back. Sarge looked around for the drums delivered earlier in the evening. Any diesel around here? I pointed to a drum. About 10 gallons in that one. Let's get that on board and hurry up about it. Sarge grabbed the radio mic from his shoulder. Thad, how's it looking over there? All quiet. Was all the shooting you guys? Yeah. We ran into a little something. Everyone's all right. We're about to head back. Taking a different route this time, though, so it's gonna take longer. We'll be waiting. Jeff helped me pump the fuel into the truck with a bucket, since the pump wouldn't pick it up. Sarge was standing in the driver's seat of his buggy, watching us. Hurry the hell up! Grumpy old fuck, Jeff said, slipping the hose out of the truck. What? Sarge barked. Jeff looked at me and I smiled, shaking my head. What's he got, bionic ears? Nah, I think he's got a miracle ear, I said, laughing. Jeff started to laugh as he took the bucket and pump to store. Looking over his shoulder, he yelled, Y'all come back now, you hear? You ready? I asked Danny. Nope. Good, me neither. Instead of taking a left off the cabin road, we went right. I was hoping that no one would be up this late in Shockley Heights, and we seemed to be in the clear so far. It was as if we were the last people on Earth. There was no one around, no sign of life. Veering off the road, we took one of the streets that dead-ended into a dirt road that led out into the forest. Driving down that road, I thought about the history of this area. When settlers first moved into the Ocala forest area, they found it to be an inhospitable land. The deep sugar sand made the prospect of farming bleak at best. The only thing growing in most of the forest was scrub oaks, sand pines, and palmettos. The sand, remnants of a seafloor from long ago, made growing anything nearly impossible. And it also created problems for travelers, including us. I was bouncing Danny around as we headed down the road. Even in the days prior to our current situation, it was a place reserved for rednecks and 4x4s. You sure you know where you're going? Sarge called over the radio. Danny picked up the radio and said, We're lost. A big smile on his face. All right, smartass. You two better get us back. We were on the backside of Lake Door when we got stuck. Damn it, I said. Sarge rolled up beside me. What the hell? You stuck? What gave it away? The fact that we aren't moving or all the flying dirt? Sarge shook his head as he pulled around in front of me. Ted hopped out and started spooling winch cable out the front of the buggy. Sarge came back with a tow strap in hand, and he and Danny connected it to the truck. By then, Ted had the winch cable hooked to a tree out in front of them. Once the strap was connected to the buggy, Sarge was ready to start pulling. I stuck my hand out the window and waved him forward. Ted was standing off to the side of the buggy, running the winch, and when he started pulling, I gave the truck some gas. As the wheels slipped through the sand, it lurched forward, gaining a little ground at a time. It soon became obvious that we weren't getting out like this. Danny appeared out of the woods, dragging some large pieces of wood. We spent a few minutes digging the front of the tires out and wedging the wood under them. Once it was in place, we tried again. This time, after a little pulling, we got out. "All right," I said. "It's official. We'll take another route on the return trip that's longer, but will keep us on roads. No way in hell are we doing that again." About 20 minutes later, we finally made it, coming in through the back of the neighborhood. Sarge called Doc on the radio to tell him where we were coming from, so he didn't get shot. We went to Danny's place first to grab the last of what was there. "Hey, Morgan, where is that house that you said we put some stuff so they won't find it?"
Danny asked.
"In the shop of the house a few doors down." "Why? What do you have?" "Just some stuff we don't need to take, but I don't want burned."
"Make it quick! We gotta get the hell out of here," Sarge said as he sped off. "We're going to take care of Reggie's body."
Danny and I took a few minutes to move some things into the shop, placing them all so it would look like they belonged there. Then we headed for my place for the last of my stuff, like chainsaws, the wood stove and pipe, and whatever else looked handy. I backed the truck up to the small trailer with the power plant and hooked up. Danny started taking the panels down, and I pulled the wire out of the conduits and tossed them in as well. We soon had them all stored inside the trailer, so we headed back down the road. Doc and Thad met Sarge at Reggie's body. Sarge wrapped him in a sheet, and they all gently laid him into the bucket of the tractor. They decided to bury him behind the house. Once the hole was deep enough, Thad and Ted stepped in and laid him out.
"Anyone got any words for him?" Sarge asked.
For a moment, no one said anything. Then, as the eastern sky began to shift from black to the cobalt of morning, Thad said, "The righteous perish, and no one ponders it in his heart. Devout men are taken away, and no one understands that the righteous are taken away to be spared from evil. Those who walk uprightly enter into peace. They find rest as they lie in death." Silence followed. Then Sarge added,
"I will execute great vengeance on them with wrathful rebukes. Then they will know that I am the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon them."
In the dim light, everyone looked at the old man. He cleared his throat and added,
"And we got some vengeance to deliver."
Chapter 23. The sun and the noise of the girls woke me up a few hours later. Sitting up, I rubbed my eyes. The trip back was uneventful, thank goodness, but I was groggy and my muscles ached. And I was hungry. Luckily, Mel had the stove set up there, and something smelled great.
"What smells so good?" I asked as I got up.
"Fried chicken," she replied. Thad brought them over this morning, cleaned and ready for the pan. "Four chickens aren't going to go too far with this many people."
"Nope, but there's other stuff too. They have some fish they're cooking on the fire."
"I'm going to have to get out and do some looking."
"Meat's good,
but we're going to need veggies too."
"You need to get a garden going soon," she said, taking a piece out of the pan and setting it on a wire rack over a baking sheet.
"Hey, that's a good idea," I said, pointing to the sheet.
"Yeah, we're out of paper towels."
"Can you pick some up at the store?" she said with a smile. I laughed.
"Yeah, just put it on the list on the fridge."
She handed me a drumstick. eat something before you go out. You don't have to ask me twice. Hey, we got any more coffee?
Yeah, a little. You want some?
I smiled. Make a pot. When it's ready, just bring me a cup out to the fire. I gave her a kiss and slipped on my Crocs that Mel had laid out. A nice change of pace from the boots I had been wearing. I grabbed my pistol and headed out the door, greeted by the dogs that were waiting for some scraps of fried chicken. I shooed them away and joined the guys, who were sitting around the fire pit in an assortment of camp chairs we had brought. I fell into one of them, putting my feet out toward the fire.
"Morning, Princess. Glad you could join us," Sarge said as I sat down.
"Do you ever sleep?"
"Nah, he just hangs upside down for an hour or so," Mike said. "You can sleep when you're dead," Sarge added.
"Well, what's the plan?"
"We were just talking about that. I know you boys need to set up house and all, but we want to go out and take a look around."
Sarge nodded toward the creek.
"I want to go see what's out there."
"Gonna take the boat?"
"Yeah, I'll take him out for a ride," Danny said.
"Cool. I'm going to work on getting the power set up and making sure Mel and the girls are getting settled in."
"Sounds like a plan," Sarge said,
pushing a piece of wood into the fire with the toe of his boot. Mel walked out and handed me a cup of coffee.
"Here, babe."
I smiled at her and said, "Why, thank you. You're so sweet." Everyone was looking at me as I took a sip and sighed.
"Oh, man, is that some good coffee or what?"
Sarge glared at me, but Jeff was the first to speak up.
"That's just not right."
Thad was smiling. "Miss Mel, I know he put you up to that. Is there any more left?"
"Oh, sure, Thad, not a problem."
Once Mel was out of earshot, Sarge frowned at me.
"Dickhead."
Smiling, I asked,
"What? What'd I do?"
Mel returned with the pot and some cups. Looking around, she said, "We need a table or something out here."
"I tell you what, Mel, you give me that pot, and I'll get you a table today," Sarge said.
"Deal,"
Mel said, as she handed mugs out to everyone.
"I know where there are some picnic tables, but we'll need a few people to go. I'm not going by myself," I said.
"I'll hang out and help you," Mike said.
"I'll help too," Thad said. "I'm not one for boat rides."
"Cool. Y'all drink your coffee, and we'll get to work." Danny, Sarge, and Jeff got ready to head out on the river, while the rest of us worked on getting the cabins in order. Thad and I shooed the girls out while we worked, and with Thad's help, we mounted 3 cabinets in each cabin, making Mel and Bobby very happy. As we were finishing the last one for Bobby, I asked how she liked the cabin. She looked around.
"It's not as nice as home, but it beats sleeping in a tent."
Thad laughed.
"Amen to that. I hate sleeping outside. I had enough of that trying to get home."
Bobby smiled as she crossed her arms over her chest.
"It'll be okay. I'm going to get with Mel to talk about dinner. With all of us together now, I want it to be nice."
"I'm all for that. Just let us know what you need," Thad said.
While we were talking, the girls walked up. It was still so odd to see the older ones carrying weapons.
"Hey, Dad, we want to go fishing," Leanne said.
"Really? I think we can work that out."
Looking at Thad, I asked, "You want to go fishing?" He smiled his signature big smile.
"Sure, it'd be fun."
"I'm gonna get my fishing pole," Little Bit shouted as she ran off.
"We'll get some rods and meet you guys at the creek," I said. Mike and Ted were going through the stuff stored under the cabin.
"What are y'all looking for?" Thad asked.
"Where's the paddles for those kayaks?" Ted asked.
"They're under Danny's cabin."
"You guys going out on the water?" I asked.
"No. I just want them with us at the creek, in case we need them."
Ted climbed out.
"What are you two up to?"
"We're going fishing. Want to come?" Thad said.
Ted and Mike looked at one another.
"Sure."
We gathered rods and tackle boxes and headed for the creek.
"Dad, I found worms," Little Bit shouted, holding up a wiggler.
Great. If we don't catch any fish, then we can eat the bait, Mike said.
Ew, that's gross. I'm not eating worms.
Man, look at the size of those guys over there, Mike said, pointing to a school of fish in the current. But they won't hit the worms. Ted looked over.
They're mullet. They don't eat worms.
Are they any good to eat? I asked.
Oh, yeah. I love smoked mullet, Thad said.
Mike looked at Ted. We gotta find a way to get them.
I got one, Taylor shouted, reeling in a nice brim.
She lifted the fish out of the water, holding it up. Everyone commented on the fish, but Taylor wasn't satisfied.
Is someone going to take it off?
We all laughed at her.
You caught it. You take it off, I said.
I'm not touching it.
Figure it out. It's your fish.
Taylor proceeded to try and shake it off. When that didn't work, she tried to drag it off on the grass. Mike and Ted were laughing at her, making her mad.
Come on. Someone take it off, please.
It's just a fish. Just grab it and take it off, I said, as I took one off of Little Bit's line.
Hey,
you're taking her fish off, Taylor protested.
She's little. She can't do it.
Thad went over to Taylor. Let me show you a trick. He took the rod and laid the fish on the ground, putting a foot on it. Now, just grab the hook and pull it out. He twisted the hook out of the mouth. See?
Oh, yeah, I can do that. Thanks a lot, Thad.
My boy didn't like to touch him either, he said with a smile. At least someone helped me. She stuck her tongue out at me, and I couldn't help but laugh. The pile of fish was starting to grow. Leanne picked up the method, and soon, even Little Bit was taking her own fish off.
I still want those mullet, Mike said.
I know how we can get them. I've got a gill net out of a pilot survival kit at the cabin. We can use it to net them, I said. Mike quickly reeled in his line.
Well, what are we waiting on? Let's go get him, man.
I'll stay here with the girls, Thad said.
Mike pointed at him as he followed me.
You do that. Catch some fish.
We went up to the cabin and began to search. Kneeling down under the edge of the cabin, Mike squatted down beside me.
Where is it?
In a gallon Ziploc bag somewhere here. We started digging through the stuff, opening bags and boxes, finally finding it in one of the tough boxes.
Here it is, I said, as I pulled it out. Sweet. Let me see it.
We strung out the net. It was 12 feet long and 4 feet tall. Holding his end, Mike said,
Let's go set it up.
He crinkled his brow.
How do you set it up?
We need some floats for the top line and some weights for the bottom.
You don't have them?
No. It doesn't come with them, I grinned at him. Gotta improvise. I've got an idea for the floats. See what you can come up with for weights. Mike wandered off to find something to use while I went to find Little Bit swim toys, seeing just what I needed in the bag. Dragging out a foam noodle, I cut it into pieces 3 inches long, slitting them open and putting them on the top line. I was about done when Mike came back with a box of big washers.
Where'd you find those?
In Danny's stuff. He looked back towards Danny's cabin.
He's got a lot of shit.
You don't know the half of it, brother. Let me see those. We tied the washers to the bottom of the net, every foot. When we were done, the finished product looked good, almost like a real net. When we got back to the creek, everyone wanted to see the net in action. We took it downriver from the school of mullet and laid it out on the bank.
Daddy, is that my noodle? Little Bit asked.
Yeah. I had to cut it up for the net. Sorry, but we needed it.
That's okay, Daddy. We can get another at Walmart.
I didn't have the heart to say anything in response to that. She didn't understand the gravity of everything, and I wanted to keep it that way. Ted came back with the paddles, and I pushed one of the boats into the water. The creek was around 70 feet wide, with 2 channels on either side of the creek. The center was shallow and full of lilies and other plants. Fortunately for us,
The mullet were in the channel on our side of the river. Grabbing the end of the net, I looped it over a small cleat used as an anchor and paddled out to the center. I tied the end of the top line around two stalks of lily, and as I went back, I shook the net, making sure it sat on the bottom of the creek. Back at the bank, I pulled the boat out of the water. "Let's drag them down to the bank past the school and put them back in. You guys paddle toward them and flush them into the net."
"Oh yeah, this is going to be fun," Mike said, rubbing his hands together.
While they got the two boats back in the water, the rest of us walked down the bank to the net.
"Is it going to work?" Taylor asked.
"Sure, if the fish cooperate," I said.
The guys started to paddle toward the net.
"They're moving!" Ted shouted.
We all watched the school struggle in the net, causing it to jerk and shake.
"Mike, untie it! Sweep it upstream and bring it in," I shouted.
Mike did so and made his way across the channel to our side. Everyone lent a hand in pulling the heavy net up onto the bank.
"Look at all of them," Leanne shouted.
"They're so big," Little Bit cried.
Thad immediately set to pulling them out of the net and tossing them up in the bank. The final count was 13 very nice mullet. We piled all of them into the bucket and took them up by the fire.
"What are we going to do with them?" Mike asked.
"They would make a hell of a meal for everyone," I said.
Once we were back to the cabins, Mel and Bobby came out to see all the fish.
"I'm telling you all, I think we should smoke them," Thad said.
"How do you do it?" Ted asked.
"Fillet them and make a smoker. Hang them in it, smoke them," Thad said.
"If you fillet them, we could use the rest of the fish to make a big stew."
"Might as well get everything we can out of them," Bobby said, looking at Mel.
"Yeah, we should. We've got a big pot."
"If we're going to cook a big meal tonight, we need those tables," I said, looking at Mike and Ted. "You want to go get them?"
"Can we come?" Taylor asked.
"You guys care?"
"No, they can come," Mike said.
"I'll get my knife," Little Bit said as she ran off.
"Do we need to bring our guns?" Leanne asked.
"Absolutely."
The girls left to get their weapons, and we quickly unloaded the rest of the trailer so we could get on our way.
Chapter 24. The Alexander Run was a meandering body of water, with depths ranging from less than a foot to 10 feet deep in the channels, separated on either side by a shallow bar in the center. It was a picturesque Florida river with cattails, water lilies, and cypress trees, with full beards of Spanish moss lining the banks. Danny navigated the boat slowly down the river. Sarge sat on the bow pedestal seat, his saw lying on his lap. Jeff sat on the rear pedestal seat, his feet outstretched, enjoying the warm sun.
"Water's getting darker," Sarge said.
"Yeah, the farther we go, the darker it gets. Up toward the spring, it's crystal clear," Danny replied. They cruised on without talking. Rounding a bend in the river, Sarge jumped from his seat and shouted,
"Holy shit! Look at the size of that lizard!"
Danny dropped the boat into neutral. Lying in a small sunny patch was a gator of 8 or 9 feet. The big reptile paid them no attention.
"Yeah, that's a biggin," Jeff said.
Sarge pointed at it.
"That's all right, Mr. Crocodile. I got your number. I know where you live, and I'll be back to get your ass."
Danny grinned. "You like to hunt gators, Sarge?" As Sarge sat back down, he chuckled.
"I like to hunt everything."
Shaking his head, Danny dropped the boat back into gear, and they continued down the river. "How far do you want to go?" Danny asked.
"I don't know. This thing go all the way to the St. John's?"
"Yeah, but it's a long-ass ways."
"I don't want to go all the way. Let's just keep going for a bit.
There's a place up here on the left. We call it the swimming hole. A forest road dead ends into it, and there are some campsites.
How about we go at least that far? Past that,
There really aren't too many ways to access the river.
Sarge propped his feet up on the side of the boat.
Sounds good to me.
They continued down the river, passing two more gators, much to Sarge's delight, as well as a number of turtles and birds of many types. As the boat emerged through a narrow opening in the cattails, the river suddenly widened. Sarge put his nose to the air.
Smell that?
Danny and Jeff looked around, sniffing the air.
Smoke, Jeff said, sitting up in his seat. Keep your eyes open, boys.
Danny moved the boat out toward the center of the river.
Y'all see anything?
Sarge asked, swiveling his head back and forth.
Nope, Danny replied.
Someone's out here. That swimming hole is just up ahead. There might be someone up there, Danny said. The river soon narrowed again, fallen trees and mats of water hyacinth reducing the channel. Around the bend, the swimming area with its boat ramp came into view. Two uniformed men stood on the concrete ramp, looking at the boat as they approached.
Looks like company, boys, Sarge said, though he made no movements.
The two men were in what appeared to be current army uniforms, complete with Kevlar helmets. They were leaned in close, talking to one another. One of them took a radio mic from his vest and started talking into it.
What do you want to do? Danny asked.
Keep going. Let's go say hi. Danny ran the boat toward the small ramp. The river at this point was maybe 30 or 35 feet wide. The only way out at this point was in reverse or to gun the throttle and run past them. Both of the men cradled M4s across their chest and made no hostile movements. As the bow of the boat pushed into the sand and mounds of ancient snail shells, Sarge nodded to the two men.
Afternoon, fellers. How are y'all doing today?
Maintaining the little distance between them, the man with the radio replied,
Not bad. How about you?
Fair to middling.
Sarge tried to get a look at the patch on the shoulder of the man he was talking with.
What's that unit patch there?
We're with the guard, out of Eustis.
You with the 101st?
The man asked, nodding at the patch on Sarge's hat.
Formerly. Retired now.
Then Sarge thought about that for a minute.
Actually, I guess I still am, having been pressed back into service, so to speak.
Where's the rest of your unit? We haven't heard of any other units around here.
Sarge chuckled.
The rest of my unit, all three of them, is back up the river there.
A Humvee came rolling to a stop at the top of the ramp. Four men climbed out of it.
I'm Captain Sheffield. Who might you be?
The lead man asked.
First Sergeant Linus Mitchell of the 101st.
A look of disbelief washed over the captain's face.
Where's the rest of your unit? Are you the recon for them?
No, sorry, Captain. We aren't the lead element of anything. Like I told the sergeant here, the rest of my unit, all three of them, are back up the river a ways.
Sarge paused and stood, causing the men on the ramp to back up.
You mind if we step out?
He asked, laying the saw on the deck of the boat.
Yeah, sure. Come on up. Come on, boys. Get out and stretch your legs, Sarge said to Jeff and Danny.
Danny and Jeff climbed out of the boat, standing uneasily near the bow.
What are you doing out here?
Sheffield asked.
Same thing as everyone else, trying to survive.
But you said you were pressed back into service, the sergeant said, then looked at the captain.
And that's true.
Then what's your mission? Sheffield asked.
Sarge smiled.
You will understand if I don't answer that question.
Sarge paused and looked around.
What are you boys doing out here in the boonies? You're a long way from Eustis.
Yeah, we were, but had to leave.
Things got out of hand there. Too many people and not enough of anything.
Why didn't you get together with the sheriff's office? Danny asked.
They're in almost as bad shape as we were. They had to leave Tavares, too. The fucking feds came in and started demanding stuff. At first, we all cooperated, because they said there were supplies coming to us. When that didn't happen, we quit playing ball.
And that's when things got ugly?
Sheffield nodded. Figures. They always want more than they give, huh?
They never gave anything. Just kept taking. And then they started hauling people away. Hell. They wanted to take my guys, and tried. But that wasn't happening.
How many guys you got out here?
I've got 57 guardsmen and a bunch of civilians.
That's a lot of mouths to feed. How you managing to do it?
Lots of hard work, and everyone's hungry regardless, a man beside the captain said.
Sheffield looked over.
Oh, sorry. This is Lieutenant Bob Hines.
Sarge nodded to him.
I bet. Where are you set up?
We've set up in the campsites by the river over here. We fish, hunt, forage, whatever we can come up with, Shane said.
Had any trouble since you got out here?
No. No one knows we're here. There's only one road, and we've blocked it at the other end, and keep a watch on it. No one's come up the river. Well, until now.
So what are you boys going to do now?
We don't know, Sheffield said, pausing. The orders we received didn't come through our command chain, and we disregarded them.
What if I can get you some help?
I know this isn't your command chain, but I can put you in touch with some higher-ups.
First Sergeant, as long as the orders come from the United States Army, I'll follow them. And these men will as well. But if they're coming from any alphabet soup agency, you can fucking forget it.
Sarge laughed. I can assure you, Captain, I ain't part of any soup sandwich.
You got any comm gear?
We do.
Let's set up a channel we can talk on.
Shane, take him to Livingston and see if they can set something up.
Sheffield looked at Danny and Jeff.
You guys can come too. They'll keep an eye on your boat.
Together, they made the short walk over to the campsites. Large areas had been cleared to make room for the military tents that were set up everywhere. Mixed in and around these tan and green tents were civilian tents of every sort. The ones close to the edge of the camp were covered with camo nets. People, both military and civilian, were sitting around. Almost everyone had a weapon. Fire pits were scattered throughout the area, some with pots or kettles sitting on them. Despite the number of people living in such close proximity to one another, the camp and the people alike were clean. Sarge was led into a tent, while Danny and Jeff stopped outside and waited.
Danny looked around at the faces peeking out of tents or from under tarps strung in the trees.
Man, I wouldn't want to be here.
Yeah, no shit, Jeff looked around. Too many people.
Inside the tent, Sarge was introduced to a man sitting behind a small folding table crowded with electronic equipment. Even though he was in civilian clothing, his short-cropped hair and military bearing made it clear he wasn't one.
Ian, this is First Sergeant Mitchell.
The man stood up, cradling a radio handset against his shoulder, and shook Sarge's hand. Sarge looked at him, with one eye half squinted, turning his wrist over and inspecting the tattoo on his forearm, then back at Shane.
What the hell y'all doing with a jarhead running your comm gear?
He wandered into the armory a couple of weeks after the shit hit the fan.
Sarge smiled, looking at the Marine.
And you fed him, and he won't go away.
Ian smiled.
Dog's gotta eat.
Sarge made a show of looking around, looking under the table, and lifting papers piled on it.
What are you looking for? Ian asked.
You fuckers are like roaches. Where there's one, there's usually more.
The comment got a laugh out of everyone in the tent.
No. I'm the only one. They give me hell for it.
Ian looked at Shane.
But I keep telling them that since I'm active duty, they all work for me.
If you're active, how the hell did you end up here?
Was on leave at home. When the balloon went up, I wanted to get back to my unit, but couldn't. They were the next best thing.
Well, I don't care how you got here. We need to set up a channel we can talk on.
Ian smiled.
No problem.
With the communication channel set up, Sarge left the tent and waved for Danny and Jeff to follow. They went down a path to another tent, and Sarge went in, leaving Jeff and Danny outside.
Captain, we're all set. That sea-going bellhop's got my call sign, Stump Knocker.
Pulling a pad out of his pocket and looking at it, he added,
and you're White 4 Delta.
Correct. Sheffield crossed his arms over his chest. You think you can get me some help?
I can't promise anything, but what I can promise is if I do, there will be strings attached.
Sheffield's eyes narrowed.
What sort of strings?
You'll have to earn your keep.
Nothing's free, Captain.
Sheffield slowly nodded his head.
All right. You get me some help, and we'll go to work.
Sheffield offered his hand, and they shook.
Sarge spun on his heels and left the tent. Danny and Jeff followed him out to the boat, and they quickly boarded.
Take us home, Danny. We got work to do.
Chapter 25.
The empty trailer bounced horribly in the dirt road.
Slow down, Morg, or that thing is going to come off, Ted said.
Looking at the speedometer, I replied,
Hell, we're only going 20.
Then go 15.
These damn roads could use a motor grader.
Call the Forest Service. I'm sure they'll get right on it.
The girls were looking out the rear window of the Suburban. Ted was up front with me, and Mike was in the back seat. When we finally made it to the paved road, it was a short piece to the gate of Alexander Springs State Park.
A lot of cars, I said, pulling through the gate and past the guard shack. The parking area was full of vehicles that obviously hadn't been moved in quite some time. Dust, dirt, and leaves were on the roofs and hoods. Piles of the same were blown up against the tires, giving the lot an eerie look. I put all the windows down, and Ted immediately stuck the muzzle of his weapon out. In the side rearview mirror, I could see Mike had done the same.
Keep your eyes open, boys and girls, Mike said, scanning the parking lot.
Taylor looked at him, then at his weapon. Slowly, not knowing what to expect by doing so, she raised the H&K, resting the muzzle on the rear gate. Leanne quickly followed suit. In the mirror, I saw Little Bit leaning over the seat, smiling at Mike, who was oblivious, with his eyes focused on the lot. The parking lot was a loop road, coming in toward a concession stand at the edge of the swimming area. As I approached the store, Ted told me to stop. He wanted him and Mike to take a look.
Keep it running, Mike said, as they walked toward the building, weapons at the ready.
They approached it, looking in the windows. Mike waited outside while Ted went in. He wasn't gone 2 minutes when he reemerged, saying something to Mike. They quickly started to move back to the truck. Mike was walking backward, watching the building as Ted moved forward, his head constantly scanning.
What's up? I asked, as he got to the truck.
Someone's living in there. But they're not in there. They're either watching us right now, or they're out. Either way, I don't like it. There's a camp loop over there. We can go over there and get one of those tables. We passed it coming in. I pointed behind us.
Can you back the trailer to it?
Oh, hell yeah.
All right. Ted looked at Mike and patted the hood. Jump on.
They hopped up on the hood, and I began backing the rig toward the campsites. In the mirror, I saw Taylor looking forward.
Keep an eye out back. They've got the front.
She quickly jerked her head around, gripping the H&K. At the loop, I backed into the road so that the truck would be facing the right direction if we needed to haul ass out of there. Stopping the truck between two campsites, I jumped out and dropped the rear gate. The campsites, once kept so clean, were littered with leaves and fallen branches. Mike and Ted moved toward the site, weapons ready, and cleared it.
Little Bit, you stay in the truck. You two, get out and keep an eye out for people.
As Leanne and Taylor were getting out, Little Bit complained.
I want to get out. I can help watch.
You keep watch from in there. She rested her chin on the top of the back seat with a frown on her face. Mike and Ted were already moving one of the aluminum tables toward the trailer. As soon as it was on, they went for another one. They had just set the edge of it on the trailer when Little Bit shouted,
Daddy, I see someone.
The guys dropped the table, bringing their weapons up.
You two, watch that way, I shouted. pointing to the rear of the truck. Ted and Mike advanced to the front of the truck. I came up behind Mike as Ted shouted, "Let me see your hands!" The man stopped, taking his hands out of his jacket pockets and raising them.
"Don't mean no harm," he shouted. "Just haven't seen anyone in a long time."
"All right, keep coming till I tell you to stop."
At a 10-foot distance, Ted told him to stop. He was wearing a worn fleece vest and what looked like typical hiking pants, though they were threadbare in some places. A shaggy beard obscured most of his face.
"Hi."
Ted nodded in reply.
"What can we do for you?" Mike asked.
Scratching at his beard, the man said,
"Like I said, just haven't seen anyone in a long time."
He paused, looking at the truck and trailer.
"Getting some tables?"
"Yep,"
Ted said, looking down the barrel of his M4.
"You guys got a camp around here?"
"Nope. You alone?"
"Oh, yeah. There are a bunch of people here, but most of them left. Some said they were going to walk home, but a few of them came back."
"Where are they now?"
"Oh, FEMA came through one day, and pretty much everyone went with them."
"Why didn't you go?" Mike asked.
"Oh, me? I'm not a real people person. I was hiking the Florida Trail and figured I'd just keep going. Once everyone left, it was kind of quiet around here, so I stayed. People left all sorts of stuff, so I took what I needed. There's canoes here, fish in the river, and other food, if you know what you're looking for."
A black dog came trotting out of the woods and stopped beside the man, sitting down and scratching at his ear. The man looked down and smiled.
"That's Drake. He keeps me company."
"It's been good talking to you, but we gotta go," Ted said.
The man looked up, running his hand through his beard, and smiled.
"Oh, sure. No worries."
He waved, turned, and walked away.
"Strange little man," Mike said.
"Yeah. He's a sandwich short of a picnic, I think," I said. Ted kept watch while Mike and I loaded the other table. We were strapping it down when Taylor walked up.
"Are we okay? Is he gone?"
"Yeah, he's gone. Nothing to worry about. He's just some dude living in the woods."
He scared me.
Someone showing up like that could be a bad thing. That's why you two were supposed to be watching for it, not watching us. It's a good thing Little Bit spotted him.
"I know. We messed up."
"No, you didn't. If it had gone a different way, then yeah, you would have messed up." I smiled at her. "Get your sister so we can head back." The trip back was uneventful. Pulling the truck around the cabin, we saw the boat tied up on the bank. Danny and Jeff were working with Thad on some sort of small thatched hut. We unloaded the two tables in the grass between it and the creek, setting them end to end. I walked over to where they were working while Ted and Mike went off to find Sarge.
"What's this?"
"It's going to be our smokehouse," Thad said, with a big smile on his face.
"Cool. I like it. Where'd you find the cane?"
"There's a big stand of it just down the creek, right over there," Jeff said, pointing into the woods.
"Nice. We can use it for a lot of stuff."
"I'm going to get more palmettos," Danny said, as he walked off into the woods. The smoker was a large teepee-like hut that used the cane for the structure, the sides covered with palmettos. Horizontal pieces of cane were tied to the uprights, and the stems of the palmettos were woven in between. At the corners of the frame, the tips of the fronds were folded in around the pole to seal it.
"Hey, Thad, is there enough of this stuff to make a chicken coop out of?" I asked.
He was on his knees, weaving in palmettos.
"Oh, yeah."
We worked in the smoker for another couple of hours to finish off the outside. Thad went to clean the fish, while Danny and I went off to find some oak and hickory for the fire.
"Did you hear about the National Guard unit we found?" Danny asked.
Surprised, I asked,
"No. Where'd you find them?"
"They're at the campground by the swimming hole. Got a bunch of people with them, too."
"No shit."
I caught myself and looked at Little Bit, but she was busy with the dogs and didn't hear my slip.
"Where are they from?" It's a unit from Eustace.
Really? Did you go into the camp?
Yeah. It's crowded, but they had it put together pretty nice.
You remember my buddy Vance? Did you see him there?
I remember him, but I didn't see him there. He was with them when they were still in Eustace.
What made the move?
Danny stopped and grabbed the end of a large limb blown out of an oak tree. I grabbed the other, and we lifted it up and shouldered it. They said there were too many people, and that the feds kept coming in and taking stuff from them. They got tired of it and bugged out. We carried the log over to the smoker and dropped it. Thad was cleaning the last of the fish.
You know where to keep the fire in that thing? I asked.
Yeah, I got this. He dropped a filleted mullet into a bucket. You want to take that to Mel so she can start on her stew? I picked up the bucket. Let me know if you need anything else. All I need is a chainsaw and axe to cut up that wood. Under the cabin on the left. Thad smiled and headed for the smoker with a bowl heaped with fillets. Thad sat in a chair beside his smoker. He craved activity, anything to keep his mind busy. It was those idle times he dreaded. Sleep was the worst. Luckily, being here gave him the chance to work and keep his memories at bay. He found a stump and placed it on the ground in front of the chair. Using the axe, he broke up the piece of oak into chunks small enough to feed the little fire in the smoker. He peeked in at the fire as smoke poured out around his face. Satisfied, he walked over to the picnic tables. Jeff was sitting on top of one, and he climbed up beside him.
"What's up, Biggin?" Jeff asked.
"Nothing. What are you doing?"
"Just watching the river. It's peaceful."
Thad looked out at the water, its lazy current causing lilies to sway back and forth.
"Yes, it is."
"I like it here better than where we were," Jeff said.
"Them cabins ain't as comfortable, but this place is a lot nicer."
Thad asked about the trip down the river, and Jeff told him about the guard unit they'd found.
"Huh. I bet that old man is going to start some shit with someone soon," Thad said.
"I would imagine. He was already starting to plan something.
I don't know what, but from the way they acted, they've got something cooking."
Staring out at the water, Thad said,
"I don't want no part of it."
Jeff looked over, and Thad continued, "I've seen enough killing. I just want to be left alone."
"I can dig it. I don't know, though. If something kicks off, I may go with him."
Thad looked over and smiled.
"Have fun."
Jeff laughed.
"I don't know about fun, but sitting around just isn't my thing. I want to do something."
"Careful what you wish for." Thad looked over again. "You just might get it."
"Life without adventure is a waste of oxygen," Jeff said, smiling.
Thad looked around, holding his arms out. He said, "All this ain't enough adventure for you?" Laughing, Jeff replied,
"Okay, you got a point there."
"Thad?" A little voice called from behind. He turned to see Little Bit holding palmetto stems in string.
"What you need, little one?"
"You know how to make a bow and arrow?" He smiled as he stood up.
"I was the best bow and arrow maker in my neighborhood."
Little Bit smiled and held out the stems and string.
"Come on, let's go make you a bow."
Thad found a limb and carried it back to the table. Little Bit hopped up on the top of it and sat down. Thad pulled out the big bowie and started cutting branches off the limb.
"Wow, that's a big knife," Little Bit said.
Thad looked at the knife.
"Yeah, it's sharp, too."
She reached in her pocket and pulled out a little Uncle Henry folder.
"This is my knife. My daddy gave it to me. It's got two blades."
Thad smiled, looking at the big blade in his hands.
"Your daddy gave me this one, too."
He strung the bow and pulled back on it. Satisfied, he handed it to her.
"Be careful."
She took the bow and ran toward the river.
"Thanks, Thad. I will."
Jeff called out,
"You know how to shoot that thing?"
She stopped and fixed one of the palmetto stems to the string, drew it back, and let it go. The green stem flew about 20 feet and stuck in the ground.
"Cool!" she cried out.
jumping up and down. Thad looked at Jeff.
I guess she does.
Mel and Bobby came out of the cabin, carrying a large pot, and set it on the fire pit. Little Bit ran up with her bow.
Look what Thad made for me.
Oh, that's nice. Be careful, baby. Hope you don't mind, Thad said.
Not at all.
Her dad makes them for her all the time. Thad smiled, but it faded quick.
I used to make them for Tony. He was always an Indian, never a cowboy.
Mel smiled at him. Hey, this will be ready in a few hours. I'll just have to keep an eye on the fire.
What's in it?
Jeff asked, spinning around on the table.
It's got the fish, some dehydrated stuff, potatoes, carrots, celery, rice, and some spices.
It should be edible, Bobby said, then added, I hope.
Sounds good to me. Can't wait.
Mel looked over at the smoker.
Is that thing working?
Thad smiled.
Full of smoke. It's working.
I've never had smoked mullet before. What's it taste like? Bobby asked.
Thad smiled. Kinda like smoked manatee.
Bobby gave him a goofy look and headed for her cabin.
Chapter 26 Mike and Ted found Sarge sitting with Doc in the cabin. Sarge was talking into the handset with someone.
What's up? Mike asked Doc.
He found a guard unit out in the woods.
No shit.
All we found was some crazy dude in the woods. Doc stared at him.
I don't even want to know.
You get that water filter up and running, Doc?
Yeah. Morgan had it set up pretty good. It's on the steps of his place. You guys get those tables?
Yeah, two of them.
Sarge laid the handset down. All right, ladies, we got work to do.
Good. I'm getting bored, Ted said, throwing his feet up on the table.
What's up?
Doc told you we found a guard unit.
They're in rough shape and need some help.
I just got off the horn with the colonel, and it took some work, but he agreed to send out some goodies for them.
Sarge tossed a notepad to Ted.
Their call sign's White 4 Delta. Get them on the horn. Use the frequency I wrote under their call sign.
Are we getting anything out of this? Mike asked.
Sarge smiled.
Oh, yeah. Milk and cookies.
Mike shook his head.
White 4 Delta. Stump knocker.
Ted repeated the call.
Go, stump knocker.
Ted handed Sarge the handset.
White 4 Delta. You have an LZ prepped?
There was a pause on the other end.
Negative, Stumpknocker, but we will. What's the ETA on the bird?